When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA SafePilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA SafePilot. Restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Boys in the Band podcast. I'm Richie Gallagher.
And I'm Peter Smith. And on this Tied to the Noughties episode, we're joined by Adam Young, lead singer in rising band The Howlers. We caught up with Adam earlier this week, a huge week for the band, in fact. We saw them launch their new EP further down the line and play their biggest hometown show so far in Hoxton, London.
Yeah, very exciting week for them and really good chat with Adam. But before we get into it, a quick shout out to our sponsors, Signature Brew. Remember, they've got that great deal for our listeners, which gets you 10% off their fantastic range at signaturebrew.co.uk. They've got tons of varieties on offer, some great mixed cases too that they'll deliver straight to your door. Just remember to enter Boys in the Band at checkout to get that 10% off.
Very nice indeed. Recommend the Studio Lager. Go and check it out if you haven't already. Very nice selections there, if lager isn't your thing as well. So do make use of that good offer. Boys in the Band at the checkout, 10% off. Okay, so good time. Crack a beer open, kick back, have a listen to this. It's the Boys in the Band podcast meeting Adam from The Howlers on Tied to the Noughties.
Welcome along, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, we're very good. Good to have you on as well, mate. I've been enjoying, well, the boy I was before since the start of September, and looking forward to the EP coming out as we speak tomorrow, yeah. Further down the line.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It feels like it's been such a long journey, but it's not. It's only been since July that we've sort of been pushing this record. But yeah, it's like, you know what? Like, for us, it was kind of a change in the guard and kind of in many ways, and sort of a very transformative record that we've kind of created. It kind of came out of the back of a tour that we did end of last year, which was like, we did like 14 dates in the winter, where it was just like super depressing, like driving up and down the country in the snow and rain in a van, and you load into a venue and it's already dark and you're just like, oh, what are we even doing, man? And it kind of like came from that. And we, after that tour, you know, half of it like sold out, so we were like buzzing. We needed to get a new drummer after that anyway. And it sort of came from that period where we started to work with bands like Black Honey, and they produced this record, and we sort of did it all like really DIY together in their lockup. And it's just, for me, it has the best song I've ever written on it. So like, you know, the title track is, for me, the best song I've ever written. Not like really like what we're known for, that sort of like heavy riffs and sort of like, you know, big music, really. It's a little bit different, but in a really good way. And yeah, so I'm really buzzing for it to come out. Like, it's been nice to see people like sort of appreciating how we've grown and how we've developed in such a short period of time. And yeah, it kind of leads on to what we've been doing the past 10 days. So like the past 10 days, we were sort of in the studio recording like a debut album. And as you can tell by my very croaky voice. So yeah, we kind of like led on to this. And the EP, in my opinion, is the best work we've ever put out. And funny you should say The Boy I Was Before, like, because that is a song that we as a band think is probably our worst song. So it's one of them where we're like, oh God. But yeah, it's just easy as well. It's just like a good little number, really. But in terms of like the songwriting, it's not great.
Oh, an enjoyable listen for me, Adam, definitely. But well, excited to hear about the developing stuff on Further Down the Line EP when that comes out, and new album. Exciting. Just tell us about that buzz you must get then going into the studio, laying down a first album. Is it, must be a different feeling to just laying down an EP, right?
It's, you know what, right? I'm one of those people that just in life, if you put a challenge in front of me, I'll rise to it, and I'll, you know, I will knock it out of the park. So we walked into this album kind of going, yeah, we're gonna be fine, don't worry about it. Like 9 days, that's more than enough time. And it got to like day three and we were like, oh crap, like we ain't got enough time here. And there was a little, I had a little meltdown. I had to take myself off and go down the beach. I was like, oh no, we ain't got any money to get any more days. And it's a mentally and physically exhausting process, but one of the best experiences you'll ever have as a musician, especially how we did it really intense. You know, it was us and the two lads from Black Honey and our engineer all in this studio. We didn't really leave the same like 50-foot radius for like 9 days. So a little bit of cabin fever sets in. And it just allows you to focus on these tunes, and they're amazing. Like Chris and Tommy from Black Honey, kind of, I work really closely with them. So I'll bring a song to them. And they don't really get involved in the writings per se. They kind of like challenge me to be better. So if something's not good enough, they kind of go, you can do better than that. So this whole process in the studio was learning and developing at the same time we were recording things, so that we went into the studio with songs which we had been touring, and they completely changed in the studio. So come the, you know, our big hometown show on Friday, we're having to play the old version of the song. So it's like, we've just recorded the new version, which is amazing. Now we're having to like go back, oh, I can't remember the old version, man. And so that's kind of cool. But yeah, like I'm excited for this album, to people to hear it, because it's kind of my brain in musical form. And yeah, some of the musicianship on it's amazing. And we actually did get it all done in the end. Like, our engineer turned around just at the end of the 9 days and was like, I have never seen how many Trump songs we did? 14 tracks. He was like, I've never seen 14 tracks recorded like that in 8 days, 8.5. He was like, that's just mental. And there was like one point where they, everyone thought I was generally going to die. Because I did I had to get vocals done. And I basically for 48 hours, 10 hours a day, I was just singing, constantly doing vocal takes. And I was like almost passing out. I was like stumbling in the booth. They were all in the control room kind of going, we need to get him out of there, but he won't come out by himself. And like our bass player said, it was like watching a boxer go round after round after round and just getting punched continually, like, you know what I mean, and not going down. It was really hard to like watch, and they didn't know how. I remember them saying, do you want to have a break? And I was going, no, another take, let's go, like, get on with it. But yeah, they were really worried about me. They were like, he's gonna die, he's actually gonna die, because it was all like, I was doing the BVs at the time, which was like all out breaths, so there was like points where I was like hallucinating, couldn't see anything. And I'm in like this, I've turned all the lights off in the studio, and I'm in the dark, and it's just like really moody and like great, I'm in my zone, but I was completely ignoring what my body was saying, and my body was saying stop. I slept well that night. I literally went passed out. But yeah, it's like, as I said, it's an amazing process. I'm kind of excited for people to hear it, because this EP is kind of like a little inkling into it. It's kind of like the
allude to it.
Yeah, but like I'd say it's more like an appetizer, yeah. If anything, you know. Then you've got the main course, which is the album, which is just like track after track after track. It's just, there's songs where I was recording them going, I don't remember writing that, but that bangs. And it was like one of these things where we're all just going, do you remember writing that? And it was like, nah, man. I was like, where did that come from? You know what I mean? It just like appeared. So yeah, it'd be cool. I don't know when that'll be out, but they've got to mix it first. I've only been back like 2 days. I got back on Sunday. So yeah, I've been back, was it a day? Back a day. So yeah, it was awesome, man. So
yeah,
I'm
really
looking
good, yeah. Yeah, can't wait to hear it, especially to hear how much you suffered for your art. I can't wait to hear those vocals.
I generally bruised my thumb. So I was like doing so many guitar takes back to back that I bruised my thumb because I was just pushing so hard on the back of the neck that it was like, there were some takes where I'd go into it and I was just like, nah, I can't. And I had to do tap out and get our bass player in. And I was like, you know the part? And he was like, yeah, sort of. And you know what I mean? Just like got in there, kind of did, got away with it. But yeah, I could go on for days about it, the 9 days. It was like a little boys' school trip because we're all in this little studio in the flat together. sharing stories, constant laughs. And weirdly, on the Saturday night when we finished recording, we just finished the album. We were like, oh my God, like, let's go get some beers. The studio owner went, oh, there's fireworks on the beach if you want to go watch fireworks. And we were like, what? Like, perfect timing. And it was like the Eastbourne Bonfire Society were throwing their annual bash on the beach. There was like big, like a lantern parade. And then there was a huge firework display and a huge bonfire. And we were just like all stood on this beach going, this couldn't be more perfectly timed.
Yeah, wow.
And then we ended up in the boozer afterwards. But then that was a weird experience because for this like annual bash, the Bonfire Society do, everyone gets dressed up in fancy dress. So we walked into this boozer and there's like 10 people dressed as Napoleon. And there's like, dressed as like American Civil War soldiers. And then there was like people dressed as cowboys. And it was just like, and then there was a bunch of people in lederhosen. And it was like, we were just in there going, this is really like the weirdest thing ever, but also amazing. Like, it was really triggering one of the lads. He was like, this is so weird. I don't like it. And I was like, please get in a fight with Napoleon. Please just go over and go on. That'd be funny. And it was just like one of these things where we were all so tired and just all wanted a beer that as soon as you had that first sip, it was like, oh yeah, it's going to be a good night now. And then, but then we were just so tired that after like a couple of pints, we were just like, oh, I want bed. I want bed. Like so totally un rock and roll.
And then straight into packing up the orders for the EP, just shipping off all the merch yourself. You can see you're surrounded by packages.
Yeah. So basically stupidly booked the studio time like during our campaign. So all the vinyl turned up at the studio. So we had to sign all that in between takes, which was just a frigging nightmare. And then all the merch turned up here at my flat, but obviously I wasn't here. So my neighbour took it in, and my neighbour wasn't too happy about these massive boxes. So yeah, I literally got back and I was like, yesterday I was like, I'll do it when I get back. But I was just so tired, like I just passed out. And then I woke up today going, yeah, I probably need to get these on next day delivery to get them by Wednesday. So yeah, I've just been doing that really. I haven't had a little break. So tomorrow is my trip down the post office of all this that I'm surrounded with right now. It's taken up my living room. And then hopefully I'll get a little bit of a rest, but I very much doubt it. That's not the life I lead.
Love it. Good stuff. So Adam, tell us a little bit then about how it all came together for the band to get to this point in the first place. What were the inspirations when you were growing up? What bands were you into? Did you all go to gigs together? What got you all together into the Howlers in the first place?
Oh, like as a band, we all met in London. So we're not originally from London. We were from like the four corners of the earth, even though it was like three of us. And so I grew up here. I live now in Portsmouth. Gus, who plays bass, he grew up in the Netherlands. And Tom grew up in Stafford. So we all kind of like came together in London when we were studying there or living there. Tom's our, you know, newest drummer, our new drummer that we got in around February. He's someone we knew for a long time on the London scene. And we needed just a more reliable guy, basically. Someone who, the atmosphere was just getting a bit toxic in the band with the previous person. And we gave like Tom a ring and he was like, oh yeah, I'm free. And it was like, yeah, great, man. Like, let's do this. So it was like, I think we went out to the Hawley at like, on like Feb 10th. And we had like a gig on March 5th. So it was like, I gave Tom like 14 songs and I was like, learn them. Trial by fire, mate, 3 weeks. And great. But yeah, we sort of like growing up, we all cross over musically in different ways, and what we listened to growing up and what we it sort of inspired us to become musicians. You know, for me, you know, I grew up in a very working class city, so that the music taste is very much akin to working class bands, which tended to be the stuff that was kind of coming out around the early 2000s and things like that. You know, this, you know, music and football very much entwined. So like the first gig that I ever went to was like 16 of us from school went to got like a minibus and the train to Bournemouth with like all our older brothers to go watch like the Cortinas just after Portsmouth and Southampton had played each other. And it was just carnage, man. The gig got shut down early. So I was like, what was I, 15, maybe a bit younger. And like, we shouldn't have even been there, but we were with our older brothers, like, yeah, and they're like buying us drinks, and we're just like, yeah, we've got school tomorrow, but whatever. It was like a Wednesday night or something. And I remember them getting pulled off stage because like a fight had broken out between Portsmouth Southampton fans, instigated by one of my friend's older brothers who just stood there, just like shouting Blue Army. And gig got pulled. And then they kept everyone inside, and then they started letting people out. But there was like six meat wagons backed up to the doors. And as they were coming out, all the staff were going, he was a troublemaker, he was a troublemaker. And they grabbed him and just chucked him in the back of the vans. So yeah, that was like, that was sort of like my first like trial by fire. But then like after that, like kind of like, you know, all the bands that we were sort of into growing up, like the Rifles and things like that. And that sort of era of like the Enemy and Hardfire and like early Kasabian stuff, and that was all happening when we were like kids. So it was like, and then when you get your first musical taste and you're like trying to find it illegally on the internet, and so yeah, there was like a lot of like music was very entwined in how I grew up, really. But it didn't really inspire me to pick up a guitar or anything. It kind of inspired me to go to gigs. It wasn't until late in school, I'd say early college, that I went, yeah, I'm going to pick up a guitar, because, you know, people in bands get all the attention and things like that. And then I quickly realized I don't actually like the attention. So it was like, it was kind of like, I even now, like, as a front man of a band, I absolutely hate it. I hate being the singer and I hate being the front man. I don't like the attention on me, and I kind of like, I like the community of it, you know, and I like speaking to people and finding out people and like, you know, sharing stories and what I do and how, what I write meaning something to someone. That's what I kind of enjoy more than like being like, look at me. But yeah, musically, I could go on for days about things. I got into Oasis Back to Front. So like most people go, oh, definitely maybe Morning Glory. I went the Shock of the Lightning album. And I remember listening to that call and going, oh, have you heard this fucking cool band called Oasis? And everyone's like, and like made me feel like a mug. And I used to like tuck my headphone up my sleeve and like listen in school like this in class. And it was like, and like, you know, do the BBC Radio 1 like live lounge as well, like in class and on like the radio on your phone and things like that. So yeah, a lot of the bands and things I got into were all through me and my mates in my science class on like a Tuesday and Thursday morning, going in and going, oh, have you got a new album? Yeah, what are you listening to, sort of thing? And they'd be like, oh, the Pigeon Detectives just released this, or so-and-so has just released this. And you would then like go home, legally download it, and listen to it the next day. So yeah, that's kind of what I do. And then Gus grew up like loving Arctic Monkeys and things like that. And he actually ran like an unofficial Arctic Monkeys YouTube page that he was just like leaking songs on when he was like 14. Which we then went, when we started a band, we were like, oh, it's got 18,000 subscribers. Yeah, we're definitely renaming that and having it as the band YouTube. We kind of did that. And yeah, and like Tom like kind of got into more heavy rock stuff, really, through the band, through the school choir. He was in the school choir, and weirdly this choir had like a metal drummer, so you know what I mean, they're playing like Amazing Grace and stuff, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, like that. And he got into that because he was kind of like, oh wow, look at that guy playing drums, you know what I mean. So yeah, like music's kind of been a big part of my life. And over the years, I've been to like so many gigs and followed bands around. Lucky enough, we've been able to play with some of them and call some of them friends. And yeah, it's been weird, like kind of like, you know, that little 14, 15, 16 year old me going to gigs with older people and kind of like looking at bands going, oh, they're amazing. And then when you meet them and you go, oh, you're just a dude, man. You're just with more money. And that's kind of us really, and sort of like our how we grew up and what kind of like influenced us really. Through that, you kind of, that was like your exposure to music. And then you kind of backtrack, and like, we kind of backtracked into like the 70s and 60s and things like that. And that's kind of where we found like, oh, that's our, this band was inspired by this band, and this band was inspired by this band, you know what I mean? That's what I find exciting about music. And then you know, I saw when the Stone Roses reformed, I saw them like 5 or 6 times, like as a, you know, a 20-year-old or whatever it was, you know what I mean? And like, you just looking around and everyone's like in their 60s. You're like, this is amazing, man. I wish I'd been the first time. In your stupid bucket hat and stuff like that. And, you know, but yeah, that's basically us in a nutshell, really.
Yeah, cool, man. So what's the guitar scene like now, like for bands? You know, is it reminiscing about those years gone by? How do you think it compares nowadays?
I think it's definitely a lot more difficult now. There's like, you know, I coined the saying, which no one believes me is my saying, but it is my saying, right? Is that you can't reinvent the wheel. All you can do is put another spoke on it, right? Which is an amazing saying. I am a scholar, you know what I mean? And like, I said it the other day to someone, they were like, you did say that first. And I'm like, of course I did. I got really offended. I was like, that's my saying, man. But it's true, like, everything's been done before. So there's a lot of bands out there now that kind of, you know, wear the shoes of their idols, which is, you know, fair enough. But music, what excites people about music and art in general is that it's different and they haven't heard it before, or it's jarring, or copycatism kind of only get you so far. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there are some amazingly massive bands that have built their careers off trying to be people that they loved growing up. But for artists now, the scene and the music industry is so brutal and so, it's just like cutthroat. And you have to be really thick-skinned and you have to be a quite strong person to kind of survive. You know, like we were in the studio with, you know, an artist that we love, and you know, they get 10 times our live fees, you know what I mean? They sell 100 times the records we sell, and they're still skint. And we all sat down and went, why are we even doing this, man? Why are we even in music? Like, you know what I mean? And they're kind of the questions that you ask. And I think guitar bands at the moment particularly have quite a hard graft, because the social side of things and the socio-political side of things as well, of what is acceptable and what is popular and what people kind of want to see on a morality level, it makes it hard for especially 3 guys in a guitar band. You know, we couldn't be more intertem white if we tried. So it's hard to try and differentiate yourself from someone else, which is, but you know, it's authenticity at the end of the day. We're very, very unique in the industry, so much so that our agent struggles to find us support shows, because they're like, oh yeah, you sound nothing like them. I'm like, yeah, but they'd be great to support Kasabian, man. You're like, nah, you don't sound nothing like Kasabian, dude. You know what I mean? It's like, not that I'm saying we've ever had that support and we've turned it down, because we haven't. If we did, I'll be biting my agent's arm off at it. I do. You know, we're so unique that it's kind of a benefit and a detriment to ourselves. But it's also the reason why we are so unique is, like, going back to your previous question, is because we're not all similar in our interests and how we grew up. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like how that comes together is the Howlers. You know, if we were all huge Oasis fans, I guarantee you we would sound like Oasis. But you know, we all have varying things that we love and go to. Like, you know, I absolutely love Northern soul music, and that kind of comes through in my songwriting and the soul side of it. And like bands like the Black Keys and things like that. So, you know, I think, yeah, for guitar bands now, it's just so difficult, not only just to try and be authentic, but put yourself out there as well in the world of social media and kind of get people to connect with who you are. So, yeah, I think that kind of answers your question in a very long-winded way.
Yeah. No, very good, mate. It's, yeah, interesting and tough, but good to see you making waves with it. And, you know, a huge week for you guys, so great to chat as well this week. Further Down the Line EP landing on Wednesday this week, and then Colours in Hoxton at the weekend. A big, big show for you boys. Go and enjoy it. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.